This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 3rd of May, 2019. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. So let's begin with the usual regular notice, and the first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711998. That's 01962 711998. And of course, as you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the button on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks you want if you want to listen again. Oh, and just one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all lowercase, no spaces. www.winchestertalkingnews.com. All you have to do is go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recorded are listed in date order with the most recent first on the list. And so let's have a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter. Welcome back, Claire, looking fit and well again. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Ros Lydiard. So moving on to the news, here are the headlines. Judge gives jail warning to Boomtown drug dealers. Motorway closure in 2 month delay. And church refuses grave tribute to loved ones. And the first headline story from Claire, please.
Judge gives jail warning to Boomtown drug dealers. A judge has warned drug dealers heading to Boomtown Festival they will face prison time after jailing a man. It came after 20-year-old Joseph Holbrook was caught trying to get into last year's festival with Class A and B party drugs. Winchester Crown Court heard Holbrook of Players Crescent, Totten, was caught with more than 3 grams of cocaine, nearly 6 of MDMA, and more than 5 grams of ketamine hidden in his trousers while passing through security at the Winchester Festival. Police searched Holbrook's home on the same day, August the 11th, where they found more than 50 grams of cannabis and a phone with contents relating to drug deals. The court heard the drugs were thought to have a total street value of £1,750, although Judge Keith Cutler said the value was likely to have been higher at the festival. Prosecutor Alejandra Tascon said that while he admitted the 4 counts of drug possession with intent to supply, Holbrook told officers the Boomtown drugs were for personal use and for his friends at the festival, while the cannabis dealing was to help clear debts. Mitigating, Richard Martin sought to play down the significance of the offences at Boomtown. He told the court, "There's no evidence he has made any cash. He had purchased the drugs jointly with a group of friends and went to the festival holding the drugs. He was 19 at the time of the offence. He comes from a good family." Mr. Martin added Holbrook was living in the family home with his brother after his parents, who were not in court, moved to Cyprus, and was aiming to study either plumbing or bricklaying at college. He said, "He is a teenager selling from his bedroom. Over the last year, he has come somewhat off the rails without parental control," although he said Holbrook had begun to sort himself out again. "What happens today is going to have the most enormous impact on the rest of his life." Despite Mr. Martin's case, Judge Cutler jailed Holbrook for a total of 2.5 years. He said, "This court is very keen to enforce if dealers are found with drugs in Boomtown Festival. They face a prison sentence. The situation is aggravated by the cannabis dealing."
Motorway closure in 2-month delay. A multi-million pound bridge replacement scheme is set to be delayed as the closure of part of the M27 planned for the end of April has been pushed back. The £19 million project to knock down and replace the Romsey Road Bridge is now set to be completed in January 2020 instead of autumn 2019. Highways bosses said the closure, which was due to happen this weekend, has been cancelled due to unforeseen ground conditions. The date of this year's Southampton Marathon was moved a week later than normal to avoid clashing with the road closure. Organisers of the event said this resulted in a 2,000 drop in the number of entries. Highway bosses said the M27 will instead close the traffic from late Friday, June the 28th, to early Sunday, June the 30th. They said the decision was made after an assessment of the ground conditions around the old bridge showed that extra work is needed to strengthen the embankments where the bridge foundations will go. The Romsey Road Bridge carries the A3057 over the M27 between Upton and Nursling. Highways England, which is leading the scheme, said the replacement bridge has a different design and will have a lifespan of 120 years. But although the motorway will not be shut at the end of the month, organisers of the Southampton Marathon said the event will still take place on May the 5th. Chris Rees, event organiser, said, "It's unfortunate that the date changed, but it was too late for us. People had booked accommodations and started training. We thought to keep the date the same, but we're going to back to April next year." He said usually about 10,000 runners take part, but due to the change of date this year, there'll be about around 8,000. Mr. Rees said May is usually a busy month with other events planned locally, and that's why the marathon in Southampton usually takes place in late April. "It's unfortunate, but there's nothing Highways England can do about it. We felt it was one of those things that needed to be done," he added. Mr. Rees said they had originally decided to change the date after the closure of the M27 in September caused traffic chaos.
Church refuses grave tribute to loved ones. Excuse me. There's a subheading, Diocese rejects family tribute on gravestone. A Hampshire man has been left surprised and angry after being told he could only put one name on his mother's gravestone. Stan Paul's mother, Violet, died in November last year and was buried next to his dad, Desmond, at Holy Trinity Colne Common Church. But when the gardener visited Blackwell and Moody to get a headstone engraved, he was told it could only include the name of his mother due to regulations set by the Chancellor of the Diocese of Winchester. Stan, of Lippin Lane, Warnford in the Mearn Valley, said, "When our dad passed away in 2008, we had no trouble with what went on his gravestone, and our mum wanted the same as him. All members of the close family, right down to the grandchildren, had their names on dad's gravestone, which is quite a common tradition. So imagine my surprise on turning up at the stonemasons to order mum's and handing over what we wanted, only to be told that we couldn't have it." He added, "What's the harm in including other names? They won't even allow us to put my dad's name on it to say they're reunited or something along those lines. I don't understand what could have changed for them to make the decision to change the rules." Stan returned to the stonemasons with a revised design, including just the initials of the family names, but was again told that this was against the rules. The rules are implemented across all churchyards within the Diocese of Winchester. The rules, which can be found on the diocese's website, do not directly address the inclusion of more than one name. Stan said, "The rules and regulations don't say anything about not having any other names. The closest thing it does say is the stones must not detract from the church. I understand why, if people want different shapes and colours, but it's just a couple of names. I don't see how that can spoil the view, even if it is a Grade 2 listed building." He also reported a gnome that was, quote, "bearing his bottom, had been left next to a cremation pot at the Holt Trinity Church and jokingly asked, why is that allowed?" Stan said his parents had supported the church with a standing order and the family had planned to make a donation from her estate, an idea that has now been dropped. The vicar of the church, Reverend Damon Drazy, has since been in contact with the family and Stan hopes to meet him to discuss the regulations. Stan commented, "Fingers crossed, when we do meet, it'll be agreed that an exception can be made at the very least. It's what my mum wanted, and she should be allowed to have it." A spokesman for the Diocese of Winchester said, "We understand how important memorials are to families and want to make sure that the new inscription can be agreed, which both meets the Chancellor's regulations and reflects the family's wishes." So the local vicar has been in church with the deceased's family to discuss some new wording options. Chronicle has attempted to contact the Reverend Drazy, but await a reply. A call to his office was referred to the diocese.
Thank you all very much. I'm going to move on now to the death notices, and that will be followed by Christian comment, which Claire will read for us. These are the death announcements for the week ending Friday, the 3rd of May, 2019. Hutchinson, Philip George Hutchinson, Hutch, late of CSOS Flowerdown, died peacefully in his sleep at home on the 25th of April, aged 98.
McGrave, Morris McGrave, former County Reference Librarian. After a long illness, bravely borne, Morris passed away on 19th April at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
Peris, Audrey Peris, peacefully on the 22nd of April in Takefield House, aged 88.
Tate, Jane Tate, née Langridge, sadly passed on the 24th of April, aged 57.
Tate, Molly Tate, née Home, peacefully in her sleep on Friday the 26th of April, aged 92.
Ventress, Monica Mary Ann Ventress, late of Winchester, passed peacefully on 24th of April, aged 89 years.
Wallace, Fred Wallace, after a long illness in hospital, passed away on the 22nd of April, aged 97 years.
Thank you very much. And Claire now is going to give us Christian comment, as I said earlier, and it's contributed this week by Mark Collinson, Canon Principal, and he, excuse me, I'm sorry, it's headed Pro-Choice, Pro-Care. Thank you, Claire.
A friend was telling me about the work she is doing, running a small charitable service to women who are contemplating or have had an abortion. Now, I completely respect the right of a woman to choose what happens to her body, but as we all know, it takes two to tango and make a baby. My friend told me about a scenario that apparently happens quite frequently when a couple find themselves unexpectedly pregnant. The woman asks the man, "What shall we do?" And the man says, "It's up to you. It's your body. It's your choice. I'll support you whatever you decide." That may sound empowering, but in fact, by saying that, the man is basically absolving himself of all responsibility and care. What the woman might be asking is, look, we have a baby. Are you going to commit to loving me, standing by me, and be a father to this child? By saying it's up to you, the man is basically saying no. What's the woman supposed to do? What choice does she have? The vast majority of abortions, 98%, are permitted under what is known as ground C, where the pregnancy is before the 25th week, and continuing the pregnancy would involve risk of injury to the physical or mental health of the woman, more than if the pregnancy were terminated. My friend is offering a listening ear to women who are struggling and sometimes even traumatized by the decision they took to terminate the life of their future child. Often, women's lives are put on hold and their mental health deteriorates as they try to deal with the guilt they carry long after the fetus is removed. They're often left to bear this alone. How many women have you met that say they've had an abortion? It is seen as acceptable and understandable for a woman to struggle emotionally following a miscarriage or stillbirth, but there is still a culture of shame surrounding abortion, despite best efforts to normalise it. It surprised me to learn that one in three women in this country will have had an abortion by the time they reach 45. That's a lot of people who may have hidden hurts and pain that it's not socially acceptable to share. Even men who support their partners in having an abortion are affected. One man who thought he was not in the least affected by his partner's abortion was asked, "How old would your child be if she hadn't been aborted?" Quick as a flash, he said, 12 and a half. He was surprised that he hadn't had to work it out. It was something he carried in his heart as if his child had been born naturally and died as a baby. That's a symptom of grief. If considering the future mental health of a pregnant woman provides the grounds for having an abortion, how are we caring for those who have had one? As a Christian, I want our society to reflect the love of God for the whole person, irrespective of the choices we make in life. Jesus does not condemn us for our choices. He provides a way for us to resolve the guilt we feel when we make choices that hurt us. Mark Collinson, Canon Principle. And just after this, it says, if you are affected by the issues raised in this column or are facing the emotional consequences of an abortion, you can seek support from Winchester Pregnancy Crisis Centre at winchesterpregnancycrisis.com.
Thank you very much, Claire. And now we're moving on to letters from the editor. And again, this week there's a huge amount of mail in the editor's bag. We've selected what we think are 12 of the best for you. And Richard's going to start us off with the first one. Then Claire, please, and then Peter.
The first one is entitled What's Wrong and comes from Peter Rees of the Winchester Labour Party. One might notice that this is actually perhaps a little bit late to be reading it since it relates to yesterday's elections. Letters in recent weeks about the local elections have proliferated, all doing justice to the Brothers Grimm. Let's be clear about the choices available to the local electorate today. We should remember the Liberal Democrats had consigned their power-hungry, unprincipled collaboration to keep the Tories in control, taking the Cameron groat to the dustbin of history. They encouraged and supported the Tory punishment of austerity and poverty, presided over the nation's dependence on food banks, and gloated during the infliction of these draconian, inhuman policies. They are not to be trusted. The Tories, well, locally, even worse. Sold off the leisure centre to the highest private enterprise bidder. Not good value for money, and price hikes all through the contract. No democratic control. Just give us the cash. Excluded many small local sports groups because they didn't fit the big money portfolio. 35% increase in basic food bank uptake, with a national increase approaching 2 million food parcels annually. The increasing poverty-stricken in Winchester have to depend on food banks to survive. Hurrah! Back to the Middle Ages. Car parking to be increased in the town centre. Absolute minuscule take-up and demand for climate change initiatives, despite the so-called access to government funding to do much more. Hand in glove with private developers to fast-track applications for small, select, overpriced developments that exclude the building of affordable homes. Secret cabinet government, with decisions taken in informal working groups rather than open, transparent and democratic discussions. The recommendations of the 2017 Claire Lloyd-Jones report are a perfect storm, who criticised the council's endemic secrecy after the Silver Hill debacle and judicial review, have never been implemented. NHS, totally transformed if the SOS for Health opts for an insurance-based service. Candidates from these two parties will sustain a dreadful regime. The only way for a more democratic Winchester is to vote for a Labour candidate. A time for change, a time for honesty, decency and transparency. Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester. And his words seem to have fallen on deaf ears.
Light years ago, I was a child in Winchester in the 1950s and 60s. Street lights were switched off at midnight. Our streets were dark. Less light pollution. Less sleep disturbance for songbirds as well as humans. And though we didn't know it at the time, cutting the greenhouse gas emissions that pollute our atmosphere and lead to global warming. Tony Stevens, Stealing Our Light Letters, April 25th, is wrong. Christine Holloway, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And this one entitled White Elephant. A salutary lesson can be learned from a Radio 4 in Business programme. In 2016, Cheshire and Chester councils pumped money into a retail project called Baron's Quay in Northwich. The councils proclaimed, against public concern, that they had, quotes, people lined up to come in. They commissioned a viability study from analysts who, it seems, simply extrapolated a retail trend from several years previously, apparently without thinking at all about what foreseeable commercial disruptors might be out there. So the experts did not foresee online shopping. Northwich now has monolithic buildings towering above us, and most of them are empty. Does this sound familiar? Winchester City Council, which has long had a big project fixation, now plans monolithic buildings to tower above us. It has overridden all concerns raised in public consultation, and it has badly compromised its movement strategy. But what is most extraordinary about the scheme is that the council uses supposed analysis by consultants, Regenerous, which is highly circular. Consider this. Cabinet report. Regenerous have explicitly identified station approach as one of the best opportunities. Regenerous report. The council has identified one opportunity, the station approach development. The justification is ridiculously short of data. What exists is years old, and questionable inference is drawn from open-ended questions. How easy would it be to find suitable commercial property in Winchester District at a cost you were willing to pay? And what are we to make of the ludicrous precision of the claim that Winchester will benefit to the tune of £81 million from this scheme? The council at no point considers the possibility that an extrapolation of office demand might be as vain as the extrapolation of retail demand was for Northwich. Yet there are very real reasons to expect disruptors, both commercial and technical, to the assumption of ever-increasing demand for offices. Communications technology is rapidly moving towards annihilating the need for co-location of office function, and AI technology is already entering its second wave. There are undoubtedly already software systems which could write the Regenis report. Soon, they could even write sensible ones. This from Christopher Gillam, Winchester Friends of the Earth.
Ray Green writes about a definable Brexit. Just for a change. Third, Nick Ray, Chronicle Letters, April the 18th, again, unfortunately, or perhaps deliberately, misses the point. He claims the referendum result was an undefinable Brexit. Nothing could be further from the truth. The referendum question was binary, stay or leave. We voted leave. No undefinable element in sight. However, because the Conservative Party selected a Remainer as PM and almost 75% of MPs supported Remain, we've endured almost 3 years of increasingly aggressive attempts to reverse the decision. If such behaviour is not shameful, what is? I'm sure that Mr. Ray is ardent in his belief that the UK is better off in the EU, and fortunately for him, the majority of the UK disagree. Last time I looked, we were a democratic country, although EU history is littered with second referenda because they didn't like the first answer. Ray Green, Alexandra Terrace, Winchester.
Need to do more. It was good to read about Hilden Natural Mineral Water's substantial investment in 900 solar PV panels, Chronicle April 25th. The company are to be congratulated on their commitment to the environment. It is impressive that they have been able to reduce their electricity demand by 27%. It is to be hoped that all businesses with similar premises will follow or improve on their example. However, Hilden's energy use will also include the energy they consume indirectly in delivering their products and in manufacturing their non-returnable glass and single-use plastic bottles. Unfortunately, we are now faced with a climate emergency that requires us all to do far more than even Hilden. If we focus on what we must achieve, we can see that their impressive achievements are still only scratching the surface of the problem. By 2030, if we are to avoid runaway global warming, we will need to reduce our dependency on fossil fuels by almost half. Although Hilden have been exemplary in increasing their clean energy production, the brutal fact is that they are still consuming at least three times as much energy from other sources, some of it in their distribution from very dirty sources. Currently, only about 8.5% of UK energy is produced by zero carbon methods. We will need both to increase energy production and to reduce our energy consumption. If, as we must, we phase out gas, oil and coal, it will be difficult to replace these with enough clean energy. We will have to make some very difficult choices about what we use energy for. It will be difficult to justify energy use for bottled water, when good water is readily available from taps and hopefully street fountains. I hope Hilden will decide to switch their skills to less inessential activities, such as the collection and marketing of locally produced food. Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
This one is called The True Value. Home truths for our planet home is where we're at, thanks to Extinction Rebellion protests in London. Ergo, who or what has conditioned humans, especially politicians, and all British political parties are guilty of this, to think that the creation of remunerative employment is of the utmost importance, irrespective of the nature of the work or its consequences for humankind and the natural world? It isn't. It is what we do that matters. even if people and governments are willing to pay money for outcomes that are detrimental to life on this planet. The making of money is an extremely poor way of measuring the true nature and value of what we do. This from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Polden Common.
Roger Stevens writes about the wrong kind. So we're back to Brexit. My letter, Brexit Nirvana, Chronicle, April the 4th, elicited various pro-Brexit responses, one of which described it as a catalogue of gratuitous insults and sneering negativity. I make no apology for illustrating the calibre of our politicians by their own words, but I do apologise for leaving out Mr. People in this country have had enough of experts, Gove. As usual, there were no answers to the questions I posed. That's because there are no answer, as is so clearly revealed by the antics of our MPs and their failure to release us from the EU. The various factions squabble and every proposal is voted down. Canny MPs want to be seen to vote for Brexit, but not the one that finally occurs. So during the great blame, they can claim it's the wrong kind of Brexit. Brexiteers need not despair. They will squabble until October when an exasperated EU will prescribe Brexit for them. Brexiteers can then carry on blaming the EU. The Remain plan is the freedom, peace, security and prosperity provided by the EU. How this dividend is applied is a matter for each individual government. Taking its cue from Matthew 25:29, our government has chosen Windrush, austerity, the hostile environment and universal discredit. The damage to our educational system and infrastructure wrought by its financial tourniquet reveals that it has already consigned us to third world status. After we are free, this state of affairs will persist, minus the benefits previously provided by the EU. When Brexit Day finally dawns, our rudderless Brexiteers will freeze like rabbits in the headlights. After blundering around in circles for a while, they will cross the Atlantic to ask Americans what to do. Mr. Trump will tell them how to run our country, who we may trade with, and on what terms. The irony of taking instructions from the United States of America, when many roll about on the floor, foaming at the mouth at the words United States of Europe, will be lost on Brexiteers. Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
An entirely different aspect. Foul people. There is a dog owner in Hairstock who allows his or her dog to foul the footpath and lawn area around the March Hare with regularity. Not only is this against the law, dog mess is a health hazard for humans, and if trod in, well, who wants dog mess tramped into their house? You cannot blame the dog. It's doing what comes naturally. It is the irresponsible owner who is to blame. I know that the majority of dog owners carry sufficient dog poo bags with them for their dog's needs. So, come on, sir or madam, and you know who you are. Consider the rest of us when walking your dog. Christine Newland, Burriton Road, Hairstock.
Now it's back to climate change. This one entitled, Why Now? Climate Change and Extinction Rebellion, Chronicle, April 25. Does one laugh or cry? Physics lectures at my German university in the early 1950s spelled out remorselessly the detail and implications of the pending resources disaster. The energy crisis, a minute aspect, was the rationale for the development of nuclear power. The generation of my grandparents had already grasped the necessity of birth control. Brackets to date either ridiculed as Malthus or approved of a strategy to be personally, quote, better off. My generation despised its own parents for unsustainable reproduction. German political parties, predictably howled down, tried to formulate programmes which included no private use of cars, holiday travel once in a lifetime and such. Why now the sudden hysteria over climate change and extinction? Is it because the rich would always be able to pay their way out of the rest of the mess? Shortages of any kind, land, food, water, energy, etc. ad infinitum, pollution, homelessness and unemployment. This from Mrs. Walton, Hyde Street, Winchester.
And Ian Tate, Conservative candidate for St. Luke Ward, complains about a pathetic letter. What a rather sad, sycophantic and pathetic letter Judith Martin wrote to the Chronicle on April the 25th. Yes, I've been a customer of Geese and Hawks for almost 40 years, and staggeringly, I still wear clothes I bought from them back in the 80s. One item in particular is an Austrian-style coat, which I purchased in 1995. It's a wonderful garment, and though a little threadbare, it still looks smart and is comfortable. It was no doubt quite expensive at the time, and unlike coats that one could buy from cheaper shops, it has been an absolute bargain, and I wished I'd bought two. The staff know me well. I often pop in for just a chat, even though I have no intention of spending any money. Although Miss Martin berates my supposed extravagance, she fails to mention that she lives in a millionaire mansion. So quite how she can't afford a cheap jacket, I just don't know. As to my lucrative role in the property market, well, perhaps Miss Martin needs to look up my company accounts. I don't see much evidence of the millions I get paid there. And by the way, I live in a property owned by my mother. It's a small two-bedroom flat. As it happens, I do some work in the property and housing sector and restaurant business, but try not to charge clients. As to whether I'm any good remains to be seen, but for some reason people seem to want to talk to me. Maybe that's because I'm so cheap. Although I like to eat out, I haven't had a holiday of any sort since 2007, so no flights aboard for me. I try and walk everywhere and don't own a car, although a friend allows me to use his vehicle when necessary. I didn't join the Climate Justice March because I've been knocking on pretty much every door across Stanmore and St. Luke. But rest assured, WinACC know where I stand on climate change, and my voting record on sustainable planning applications is known to many. Ian Tate, Beerwick Road, Week, Winchester.
A beacon. Experiences at April's Chat Tea Cafe at Badger Farm Community Centre sparked off a letter on a familiar but key topic of human spirit, survival, motivation, kindness and empathy. As a volunteer at the local community centre, together with other enthusiastic volunteers, I had the privilege of welcoming for the fourth time a number of elderly folk for a free cup of tea, coffee and homemade cakes. Elderly? Some were in their 90s and articulate, good fun and also chocolate cake lovers. Like me. What stood out like a beacon of positivity was a distinct and natural optimism, a positive view of life, even when there are tragic happenings in the world and closer to home. I engaged with many of those present, discussing views on many topics, asking questions, sharing answers, and thoroughly enjoying the mutual humour, resulting in genuine laughter, smiles, and a strong element of empathy. I feel honoured and privileged to be actively and happily involved in such a worthwhile activity, but not patronising the visitors, but achieving an honest, gentle rapport, sitting with them, talking and laughing with them. Such a privilege is never taken for granted. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Community care. Your article on April the 24th, giving prominence to the court case of Tony Walters, raises important questions. Clearly, the police and emergency services need to be protected against persistent calls, which waste both their time and energy. However, one must question why an individual should be exhibiting this pattern of behaviour in order to find a positive solution. Perhaps the individual has a mental health problem, which produces loss of control due to sudden stress that needs treatment. A spell in an overcrowded prison won't normally achieve this. Mr. Walters is generally a very helpful and caring person who has helped many young people in Winchester with an alcoholic problem to get safely home at night or to A&E. He also has many practical skills but has a complicated background. He undertook protection service for this country at the time of the Irish Troubles. He also possesses a strong sense of justice over social malpractices that he has encountered and he believes were covered up. Relevant health professionals who have been working with him know that what he needs is sophisticated mental health treatment that we have discovered doesn't exist in Hampshire. This raises the question as to how best care in the community for such people in our town can be achieved when alcohol and now drugs can be an aggravating factor that are all too easily obtainable. It is well known that too many people in our overcrowded prison system with short sentences have untreated mental health problems. Government's budgetary and austerity problems over many years have weakened a range of vital public services. Mental health is just a glaring example, making it difficult to gain timely help in this country. Reports which give the public only one side of the problem can make it difficult when a prisoner returns home. This from Andrew Rutter, St John's Road, Winchester.
Thank you all. And now Peter's going to read the All Your Say column for this week. And Debenhams have been out on the street with their roving reporter. Not Debenhams, the reporters of Hampshire Chronicle have been out on the street with the subject of Debenhams, which has named 22 stores planned for closure as the owners plan to revive the chain. The report has been asking people what they think. So let's have that from you, Peter, please.
Thanks, Ros. As you say, you'll say. Debenhams has named 22 of the stores it plans to close as its new owners plan to revive the chain. We asked people what they thought. Dennis Brown, 73, retired scaffolder, Bishopstoke Road, Bishopstoke, said, "The wife is not happy. It's an old shop, and it used to have lots of everything. It's sad to see a big store shutting down, and I don't know how long the others will last." Garth Smith, 82, retired scientist of Springvale Road, Kingsworthy, said, "I like the store, but these days they all take up too much space for what they sell. These are changing times. I don't see them lasting much longer." Paul Sheriff, 55, Ministry of Defence worker of Bar End, said, "Our Debenhams isn't closing, so it's cool. The menswear in there is really good, so I hope they keep the rest open." Tessa Crouch, 69, retired hairdresser of Arthur Road Hyde, Winchester, said, "It's sad to see some go. It's a good shop, and I use it on and off, but it used to be so vibrant. I hope the remaining ones last forever." Thanks, Ross.
Thank you very much. And do you have any comments on that subject, Peter?
Yeah, I tend to agree with the last one. I've certainly done some shopping in Debenhams, but it's not very busy these days. It would be a real shame if it closed. It would, because it would do such damage to the high street, and heaven forbid it would turn into yet another restaurant.
It would be quite a big one.
It would be.
What do you think, Claire?
Not too sure.
You're not too
sure?
Sorry,
I'm not too sure.
Okay. Don't know whether it's a good thing for it to go or bad.
Well, I think we need a decent store in Winchester, a decent-sized store. Mm. But I'm not sure.
Okay. It'd be nice if they brought John Lewis in, wouldn't it?
That's an idea.
Anyway, thank you all for all of those. I'm going to move on now to... just to say to the listeners that if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air on the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. Or you can email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, all lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester SO23 8AL. And you could even drop in when you're in Winchester and have a chat with them. Now we're going to editorial comment this week, and the editor writes about the debate on the culling of crows. Civility flies out the window in cull debate. Regardless of your views on Chris Packham, he does not deserve death threats for trying to protect crows. The Springwatch presenter claims he and his family received threats of a very serious nature after his group Wild Justice brought legal pressure on Natural England to revoke 3 general licences which allowed the shooting of 16 types of bird, including crows, magpies and pigeons. Many countryside groups claim these animals are pests which damage crop and impact other bird population. An individual licence to shoot carrion crows has since been issued. There is a sensible debate to be had here. However, it seems that we are no longer able to have a difference of opinion without it becoming personal, abusive and threatening. What good does it do to hang dead birds outside Mr. Packham's gate or send abusive messages to charities he supports? Mr. Packham may be wrong or right, and many people in the countryside think he is wrong. However, their real beef should be with real English nature, which seems to have caved into Wild Justice rather easily. Good, now, Richard has first person, and the headline this week is "How Green Is Your Valley?" And that's for you, please, Richard, to continue.
Thank you. And this piece actually has no name attached to it, so it seems to be anonymous. The green debate is polarising. It seems you have to be either very young, Greta Thunberg, 16, or very old, Sir David Attenborough, 92, to get heard. Worthy though both these individuals are, as someone once said, we're all in this together, and as such, everyone has a voice, or should have. But is that enough? There's now pretty much no doubt that there is climate change going on, and some of it is man-made. Even Lord Lawson has been uncharacteristically mute, although he's still vilified as a climate change denier. An insulting form of words, given Nigel Lawson's ethnicity, but the shrill voices of protest have little time for nicety, so convinced are they of their own righteousness. The question is, how do we as individuals do something about it? Having been caught up a couple of times in London in the Extinction Rebellion protests, I'm not sure they have the answer. Oh yes, as it's been reported elsewhere, at first sight they were a jovial and diverse bunch. Look more closely, though, and you saw all the usual suspects born to protest. The ER logo, a cross of St Andrew inside a circle, is reminiscent of the sinister logos used in Brit movies portraying some dystopian Clockwork Orange-style breakdown of law and order. Although in the film, such logos are assigned to far-right organisations. An irony that has clearly passed ER protesters by. It seemed to me as they impeded my energy-efficient walk across Waterloo Bridge, there was an awful lot of virtue signalling going on. It's hard to take seriously a young, hideously Caucasian protester with dreadlocks, clearly with no inkling of the cultural misappropriation the chosen hairstyle implied. Ah, but they have moved the issue up the agenda and given us something else to think about other than Brexit. Well, maybe for a short time, but fundamentally there are many yarns still to be won, and it requires individual action by all of us. But who am I to lecture anyone? Well, here's my list of green credentials. As young as 16, I was involved in something called the Plymouth Conservation Corps. This involved physically turning up and doing real work to restore decaying woodland. We found our true vocation rescuing a very rare tree marooned in about-to-be car park on a new industrial estate. I managed to interest local BBC TV in the Plymouth pear tree, Pyrus cudata, The five surviving rare trees were saved, and I got the chance of what would turn out to be a moderately successful career in broadcasting. Several decades later, I have a sustainable wood pellet boiler to heat my home, and I drive a plug-in hybrid car. I have significant investment in a company building battery farms to help smooth intermittent wind and solar energy. I have solar panels at my offices, which generate just under half of our electricity usage. I'd have them at home too, but being in a conservation area and occupying a listed building, I'd no doubt have to battle with Basingstoke's council's planning officials. I might have another crack at it. I'll let you know how I get on. I might even try to put up a windmill at my office location, a Hampshire High Point. I'll then see how green the local residents are. That'll be down to Winchester planners, but perhaps offshore is the answer. Next year, we'll all have a chance to put our money where our mouths are. There are currently 250 individual factories in China developing pure electric cars. When they hit our market in 2020-21, they'll be much more affordable than the current offerings. The likes of Jaguar Land Rover are playing catch-up. Let's see who buys. Protest is one thing, meaningful individual action quite another. Stopping people using Waterloo Bridge is just chippy.
Thank you very much. And Peter now has Belgarum. Saxon banners come home. That's one for you.
Thank you, Ross. Two banners displayed outside the British Library earlier this year to promote the major exhibition, Anglo-Saxon Kingdoms, Art, Word, War, have now arrived in Winchester for a potential permanent display. They were put on show for the first time for parishioners of St Bartholomew's Hyde on Sunday at the annual parochial church meeting as part of a consultation to find the best site for their long-term location. The subject of the banners is the Golden Charter, given to Newminster in Winchester in 966 by King Edgar, but later moved to Hyde Abbey in 1110. A vertical banner shows the king offering the charter to Christ, while the complementary horizontal banner shows Edgar accompanied by the Virgin Mary and St Peter, the two patron saints of Newminster. Professor Simon Keynes of Cambridge University explained, "The text of the charter, written in gold letters over 60 pages, seeks to protect the community of Newminster from any threats, not least from the secular clergy. The significance of the document was not just political. It was also a fine example of the Winchester-style school of illumination, which flourished in the 10th century. The fact that this image from a Newminster charter was chosen to represent the whole exhibition, it was also the image on the front of the catalogue, underlines what an exceptional document it was," said Edward Fennell, coordinator of Hyde Arts and Heritage, which secured the banners from the British Library. For over 400 years following the move of Newminster to Hyde, the manuscript would have been held in the Abbey Library just a few yards from St Bartholomew's and Hyde Gate. So in a sense, the banners have now come home.
And now we're on to historical items, and I'm starting 200 years ago. 200 years ago today, Monday, May the 3rd, 1819. The Quareth Cathedral, being under repair, divine service was performed on Sunday last in the Lady Chapel, which the Dean and Chapter had previously arranged to be fitted up. Died in Winchester on Tuesday last, at an advanced age, Mrs. May, which was much lamented by her family and her friends.
One 100 years ago, Saturday, May 3rd, 1919. A quarrel on Monday night between two sections of the troops in camp at Morne Hill for repatriation to countries overseas led to the circulation of very sensational and altogether exaggerated stories the following day. In consequence, no doubt, of a statement which appeared in the early edition of at least one of the London evening papers, the following official notification was issued on Tuesday evening. The War Office reports that a disturbance occurred last night at the repatriation camp in Winchester among a number of troops awaiting overseas transport. There is no truth in the report that three men were killed in the course of the disturbance. And the second item, three deaths under tragic circumstances were reported in Winchester yesterday. The driver of an L and SSWR train arriving here shortly before 5 o'clock in the morning made a report which led to a search party. They found the body of a man partially decapitated and otherwise injured.
Ooh.
50 years ago, Saturday, May the 3rd, 1969. Winchester City Council will meet on Tuesday to decide the fate of the fire-gutted wing of the Guildhall, which was reduced to a blackened shell on Monday. The fire, which started in the roof and caused many thousands of pounds worth of damage, quickly engulfed the building in flames, but firemen managed to save the main Victorian section of the Guildhall. Five of them were slightly injured in the process. Now the problem facing the City Council is whether to pull the remains of the 60-year-old wing down and start again with a new building, or whether to renovate the ruined section. Experts have been examining the scaffolding-clad remains, and a report will be submitted to the Council on Tuesday morning. The City's Planning Department and the two recently modernised Magistrates' Courts were destroyed, and the City Treasurer's Department on the ground floor was severely damaged. And secondly, yesterday the Winchester Cathedral Treasury was formally handed over to the Dean and Chapter by the Worshipful Company of Goldsmiths in London. And on Tuesday there opens the first complete exhibition of church plate drawn from all parts of Hampshire. The exhibition is to remain until mid-September.
25 years ago, Friday, April the 29th, 1994... MP Jerry Malone's call for a public review of Winchester's controversial traffic regulations has been dismissed as an electioneering gimmick by leading City Councillor Jock MacDonald. The Liberal Democrat, who is chairman of Winchester's Traffic and Engineering Committee, claims Mr Malone is meddling in matters he does not understand for political purposes only. He said his statement at the time of the local election bears all the signs of irresponsible political interference. Luckily, Winchester's experiments and the main thrust of the park and ride proposals have all party support. The row between Messrs Malone and MacDonald broke last week when the MP suggested a questionnaire be issued to establish the public's view on new traffic calming measures, like the one-way system and proposed park and ride programme. He said he had received many letters of complaint about these so-called improvements, and there was now a danger of culture of antagonism developing between those affected and the City Council. But Mr MacDonald maintains the MP did not contact either the City or the county before making his comments and does not know what he's talking about. He explained that the present traffic arrangements were experiments and already part of a consultation exercise. For example, more than 1,400 people have attended 12 meetings on residence parking in recent months. Mr MacDonald said, "Of course, there are objections, and some very valid ones, particularly from Tower Street and possibly from Drury Street. The local authorities want to know these objections." And the second section. Over the past year, members of the Mothers' Union in the Winchester Diocese have made a patchwork quilt as a major fundraising venture, and it's now ready for display. The beautiful quilt was the brainchild of Mrs. Elizabeth Benton, chairman of the Diocese Overseas Committee, who hopes that the money raised will make a considerable contribution to the funds raised each year to further the work of the Mothers Union worldwide. While in Uganda in 1993, Mrs. Benton and Mrs. Pram Ward accepted an invitation by the Bishop of Bukidi to spend 3 weeks living with Mothers Union members there, seeing the organisation in action for themselves. They discovered a standard of living so low that it fires rise to many problems. Women were responsible for providing food for their large families, which means they look after both growing and harvesting. Wood for fuel had to be gathered, while the nearest water may be several miles away. Adding to this was an AIDS epidemic, with a resulting increase in the number of orphans, which put extra pressure on the extended family and their fragile economy.
Gracious me, quite a lot going on in 25 years ago. Thank you very much, everyone. Well, this takes us now to have a look at what's on in the region, and over the next couple of weeks, well, it's a quiet period at the moment, but there are some things that may interest you. I'll give you first of all the meetings and concerts that you might like to go to. Saturday on May the 11th, Community Day, St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, Winchester. 10:30 to 4, £1 entry, under 16s free. The theme is the circus, an all-day programme of live music and dance, cafe, barbecue, beer and pims, dog and circus costume competition, animal farm, bouncy castle, face painting, children's craft and quiz books and plants and more. All in the aid of Building for Life at St Paul's. And St Paul's do have a very active fundraising programme. And I think that one sounds lovely for the children. You may have grandchildren or children you might like to take. Now, there are concerts in Winchester Cathedral. And the Bank Holiday organ recital is performed by David Newholm, assistant organist at Canterbury Cathedral. And those tickets are £10 from the Cathedral Box Office, 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275. And on Saturday, May the 11th, Winchester Fusion Choir, under the direction of Mari O'Brien, present a concert for Winchester Parkinson's. And that's at St Stephen's Church, Oliver's Battery, 7:30 p.m. Music to make you want to sing along. Tickets are £6.50 available at the door or from, I'm going to have to read this to you, WAMELKLE. That's WAMELKLE at yahoo.co.uk. Now, there are, though, other things to interest you, and everyone here has got something to read, and I think I'll give Claire a start with the vintage cars and buses.
Well, it just says vintage buses.
Oh,
return
sorry,
to the city.
My mistake.
The original King Alfred Buses Running Day returns to Winchester on Bank Holiday Monday, May the 6th. At least 30 vintage buses will be providing free services, including 12 traditional King Alfred buses. There will be the usual transport bazaar in Winchester Guildhall, open between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. The event is one of the main events in the UK for bus enthusiasts. Plentiful car parking will be available at St Catherine's Park and Ride, with frequent free buses to and from the city centre, starting at 8:30 a.m.
Thank you very much. And Richard, please.
The Winchester Catholic History Group has a lecture coming up at the university. On June the 3rd, John Merriman will lecture on the impact of the Black Death, 1348 to 1349, on the Diocese of Winchester. The Black Death is believed to have come into the country from a port in Dorset or Devon and wiped out most of the priests in Hampshire within 18 months. The lecture will be at Milner Hall, St Peter Street, at 7:30. Lasts about an hour. Questions afterwards. Entry is £5, students £2.50.
Thank you very much. And now, Peter.
The East Stratton Phaeton Dog Show will return this June with a celebrity guest set to open it. Actress and singer Sue Pollard, known for her work on Heidi Hi,
Hoody Ho.
We've been practising. Sue will be welcoming guests and then will later judge the dog competition. The afternoon event is to be held in the village green opposite the Northbrook Arms in Stratton Lane on June the 1st. Family entertainment for all ages will be on offer, along with a wide range of stalls and sideshows, a barbecue and bar, a magic show, tea tent, tractor and trailer rides, a raffle, as well as a jazz band and the annual dog show. Hello, campers.
So it's not so very quiet. There's another one here. The Cathedral have been doing this. The Cathedral's to host a gin event. This year, Winchester Cathedral will be hosting an all-new For the Love of Gin event. It will run on May the 9th from 7pm to 10pm, and the Cathedral are happy to be working alongside the Winchester Distillery in Alsford, who produce handcrafted gins using only the finest locally sourced botanicals and traditional methods. It's getting better and better, isn't it? Tickets for this event cost £35 per person, which includes a drink on arrival, a four-course meal, and two glasses of wine each. Why aren't they getting gin, I have to ask myself. But it does sound very good. You can book this via telephone on 01962 857 258. Or you can email myevent@winchestercathedral.events. That sounds very, very entertaining and very pleasant. So thank you all for reading yours. It all sounded delightful. And the next thing you're going to have is the lighting up times. And we start on Saturday, the 4th of May. The sun will set at 8:32pm. And on Wednesday, the 8th of May, the sun will rise at 5:26am and will set at 8:38pm. And we're moving on to items of general news now. And Claire, we'd like to have your first article, please.
This is headed Walking for Hospice Appeal. A Winchester man is set to complete a very important 46-mile walk in aid of the city's hospice appeal. Richard Bett, who's 67, will take the sponsored trip from Weymouth to Wareham on May the 31st and hopes to raise at least £10,000 after achieving his original target of £3,000 in just 3 days. His 63-year-old wife, Viv, has ovarian cancer and has been receiving regular chemotherapy at the Nick Jonas ward of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital since 2015. The couple, both retired teachers, have lived in Quarry Road, Winchester, for 25 years, and their three children went to King's School and Peter Simmons College. Richard said, "Together we've been managing the condition, and currently we have some weeks of remission in which we can get out and do things like fundraising projects for the Winchester Hospice. It feels so important to be investing our energies in this at such times, as well as spending time with our family and going on holidays when we can." He added, "I've been minded to do things in aid of the hospice for some time. It's personal and a very relevant project. We don't know what the future holds, and lots of people are going to need the hospice. It could be any one of us. And it's not just the 10 beds, it's the home care service that will be available, which is essential. The money raised from this walk, just like all other fundraising efforts, is very important. Richard has already raised more than $8,500 on his online Just Giving page. The support has been inspiring. There has been just so much of it. I thought I'd raise £3,000 in total, but got there after 3 days. I left it and left it, and all of a sudden I was at £7,000. So thought I'd push my target higher, said Richard. I'm very excited by the challenge. I've run 4 marathons in the last 20 years, but this is going to be very tough walking.
Kate's concert after a stroke. Kate Morgan, a resident at Brendan Care, Park Road in Winchester, recently organised a recital for friends and family following a long journey of speech and music therapy. Originally trained as a classical singer, Kate had sung professionally and taught singing to a group of adults, the Clifton Singers, in the Winchester area until she had a stroke in 2011. Kate had the good fortune to be put in touch with music therapist Owen Clark, who has since been helping her get back to singing and in the process improving her speech. Kate's been a resident at Brendan Park Road for 8 years and has been practising music and arts all her life. A short while ago, Kate said she'd like to sing again and perform for her fellow residents and other friends, so she and Owen worked together to compile a programme of music. Their recent recital for soprano, guitar and harp included music and arrangements by Henry Purcell, Benjamin Britten and George Gershwin. Residents and friends joined her for the performance and afterwards enjoyed a chat, homemade cake and tea. Kate was delighted with how it went and is already planning her next event. Kate's husband Philip is very proud of Kate's drive and said, with everything that's happened, Kate has not lost her determination to do all she can with what she's got. She had speech therapy at the hospital for a few years from a very good therapist, and since she arrived at Park Road, Owen has been central to her gradual improvement. Singing has been a very important part of her life, and I'm so glad she can still make use of this gift.
People chuffed at meeting Thomas. Thousands of people from across Hampshire descended on the Watercress line this Easter to meet the world's favourite little blue tank engine and his station-sweeping friends, Rusty and Dusty.
Oh.
It's obviously we're waking some memories here.
It is.
Families enjoyed storytelling and mischievous magic performances from the dynamic duo, as well as vintage fairground rides and trips behind the famous engine and the Watercress line's home fleet and miniature railway. Woody's Mountford, marketing director at the Alsford-based Watercress line, said, "It's always a pleasure to welcome Thomas back to the Watercress line. We were delighted to see so many families from Hampshire and beyond enjoying themselves this Easter."
Sleeping Bag Marathon. A Winchester man has broken a Guinness World Record at this year's London Marathon for being the fastest runner in a sleeping bag.
Oh.
Ben Burfoot, who lives in the Full Flood area, set a new record of 3 hours, 41 minutes and 59 seconds, beating the previous top time by just over 2 minutes. The 44-year-old ran in a sleeping bag to raise awareness of homelessness, looking to receive vital funds for the charity Winchester Church's Night Shelter. Ben said, "It's great to be a world record holder, but towards the end I was just close enough to the former record to be a bit nervous, so I really had to speed up. The race was fine most of the time, though, and really, really fun. The amount of support on the course is just unbelievable, particularly when you're dressed in something as unusual as a sleeping bag. You've really got to dig deep, but the support helps get you round." Ben launched the training for his sleeping bag challenge at Winchester's Park Run in February, where he was joined by Night Shelter representative and supporters. He's been regularly running around the city in his sleeping bag, much to the amusement of local people. He added, There were lots of factors that could have impacted on my performance on the day itself. However, the weather was absolutely perfect for running in a sleeping bag. Cloudy and overcast, with a breeze, which definitely helped me break the world record. A big thank you to all those who have supported my campaign. To break the world record, which was adjudicated on the day by Guinness World Records, Ben had to run the 26.2-mile course wearing his sleeping bag upside down, with the zip done up to his shoulders and his arms tucked inside, leaving his feet free to run. His fundraising campaign has raised almost £2,500 for the charity, which helps those experiencing homelessness in Hampshire. Michelle Price, manager at the night shelter, said, "We're always incredibly grateful when our supporters raise money for us, and this is probably one of the most unusual ways that anyone has ever done so. We are thrilled that Ben achieved his aim of breaking the world record for sleeping bag running, and in such high-profile fashion too. Everyone at the night shelter thanks Ben for all his hard work and the vital funds he's raised for the charity."
Strong turnout for third mass bike ride in the city centre. Even Storm Hannah couldn't deter 200 cyclists from flying the flag for pedal power around the streets of Winchester on Saturday for the third mass ride organised by campaign group Cycle Winchester. Separate bike trains rode in from Kingsworthy, Badger Farm, Hairstock and Highcliffe, then merged for a celebratory lap of the one-way system. Homemade cake and drinks awaited the riders in Abbey Gardens, where the sun finally decided to come out and encourage people to stay around and share their experiences. Ride organiser John Arthur said, "Anyone who's ever cycled into and around our one-way system will know what a grim and scary experience it can be. To do the same journey in relative safety amongst a large mass of fellow cyclists can be quite exhilarating. However, we hope that the good intentions within the Winchester Movement strategy will lead to bold initiatives that make cycling a natural choice for getting around without needing to find safety in numbers." Fellow organiser Mark Rias has seen in his home city of Barcelona what a large visible presence of cyclists on the streets can do to change thinking and priorities. "Winchester cyclists need to keep getting out on the streets like this. Local decision makers wanting to support healthier lifestyle choices will quickly realise they're pushing at an open door. If the money is spent on the right way, 200 cyclists are willing to make brave conditions. Imagine how many people would choose a bike over a car if the streets were more welcoming." The mass ride routes are between 2 to 3 miles long and take about half an hour, as they are ridden at a gentle, inclusive pace with a pause and pick-up point midway. Most drivers were respectful, supportive and patient, but a tiny minority of impatient or aggressive drivers make it extremely hazardous to be cycling on streets which are crammed with cars. In fact, the town centre lap, which on previous rides had taken about 10 minutes, was often slow to a crawl this time due to the sheer volume of motor traffic. Tentative plans are underway for Mass Ride 4. Those unable to wait for more bike thrills around the city can join in with Winchester Cycle Fest and Family Ride on June the 9th, part of the Winchester Criterium. Is that the right word? Okay.
Thank you. And now here comes a bit of a timely warning for those musicians out there. Entitled "Turner Comes a Cropper." Hampshire musician Frank Turner vowed the show will go on after being dropped while crowd surfing. Frank, who is originally from Meanstoke and is currently touring in America, was hurt during the gig in Birmingham, Alabama. A video published on Twitter shows the punk and folk singer-songwriter leaping into the crowd during the gig on Friday evening. In theory, the audience should carry him aloft, but this time, they dropped him. Following the incident, Frank tweeted, "Birmingham, such a wonderful show. Alas, I got hurt pretty bad at the end there, so no encores." Got to go see the medics. Thanks all. For those asking, I got dropped about 6 feet onto solid concrete on my back. No fun. However, he vowed, tomorrow's show in Memphis will happen, one way or another. See you all there. Fans quickly messaged Frank to wish him well. The real Jen K said, ouch, man, I hope you heal quickly. I know it's a couple of weeks out, but I'll bring you some muscle cream in Cleveland. Benny Bright added, the fact you finished the song is a true credit to your incredible professionalism and passion, dude.
Well, thank you very much.
Theatre archivist retires. One of the men instrumental to the survival of Winchester's Theatre Royal has retired after 40 years. Phil Yates, who has worked as the honorary archivist of the theatre since the 1970s, says he will now enjoy the theatre from the audience instead. As previously reported, the 91-year-old was part of the Gang of Six who saved the theatre when it was threatened with demolition in 1974. Phil said that after amassing 40 years of memories at the theatre, his favourite was last year's reunion of volunteers. On November the 1st, 150 guests converged on the theatre for an evening of reminiscing and performances. However, Phil said now is the right time to put his feet up. He said, I feel I honestly can't go on much longer. All the archive material is now gathered together. There's no archive material left to look at. The Theatre Royal building started life as the Market Hotel in 1850, before being sold to brothers John and James Simpkins in 1912 and reopening as a cine variety venue in 1914. In 1924, it converted to a full-time cinema, which lasted for the next 50 years until 1974 when it closed.
Here's an organisation that's seeking a treasurer, and I wonder if you know of anybody who could help. An increasingly busy Winchester charity that helps people in financial trouble is seeking a treasurer. Winchester Basics Bank offers emergency food to some 1,400 people a year. In recent months, the charity, based in Milland Road, Highcliffe, has taken on more work. The charity has an annual expenditure of £30,000 and issues food valued at £80,000. Anyone interested in the role can contact Chairman Mike Slynn.
Store bomb hoax. Police rushed to a supermarket in Winchester after reports of staff being threatened by a man. Officers were called to the Tesco store in Eastern Lane, Winnell, at around 10 p.m. on Monday. A 23-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of making a bomb hoax. He was given a conditional caution for a public order offence, with a condition to write a letter of apology to the store. A spokesman for Hampshire Constabulary said, "The incident has been treated as an isolated one, with no wider risk to the store or local community."
Attack order. Winchester man Tiger Hancock has been handed a community order after admitting attacking a man. Hancock, 21, of Portal Road, Highcliffe, attacked Gary Price in Basingstoke and damaged his car, estimated at £100, on October the 9th. The town magistrates heard. He was also guilty of threatening behaviour on February the 19th and failing to attend court on April the 1st. They imposed a rehabilitation activity requirement of up to 20 days, an £85 victim surcharge and £20 costs. They also ordered Hancock to pay Mr. Price £150 compensation.
Opening postponed. The Watercress Way charity is to reschedule an unveiling ceremony after a guest from the BBC was unable to attend. Correspondent Robert Hall, who lives locally, was set to open a new interpretation board at Couch Green near Martyr Worthy as part of the charity's Dawn to Dusk Day on Sunday, but was instead called away for last-minute filming. A new date for Mr. Hill to do the honours will be posted on the charity's website and social media when confirmed.
So that's all we have to give you from the Hampshire Chronicle this week. And I'm going to say that with a reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call. If you have any problems at all with your recording, do ring Mary. Her number again is 01962 711 998. And we have to say thank you to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Bye.
And Peter.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, until next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick into the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Thank you very much. Until next time, goodbye.